Dr. Mitch Earlywine is a professor at State University of New York and the author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. We've got links to it right up at normalaudiostash.com. Dr. Earlywine also sits on Normal's advisory board. Mitch, welcome back here to the Audio Stash today.
Always a pleasure.
Now, we're usually talking about cannabis and mental health, cannabis and the brain, but today we're going to begin a series of discussions about alcohol, by far America's number one recreational drug of choice. First, let's talk about what alcohol is doing to us when we drink it. What happens to the brain and the body when we take a drink?
Well, alcohol isn't one of those drugs that works on a single neurotransmitter system the way, say, the opiates do or heroin or something like that. So it has a big effect on a whole bunch of different membranes and neurons all through the brain. And basically every system is affected from, you know, your vision to your hearing to your subjective sense of touch. There's a mild anesthetic effect at certain doses. And then as that dose increases, of course, we get all the stereotypical things with drunkenness. So slurred speech, impaired reaction time, trouble staying awake, and, you know, all the stereotypes along those lines.
So whereas cannabinoids are interacting with these specific receptors in the body, alcohol, this is like the chemotherapy of intoxication.
It's really a much more complicated drug as far as neurotransmitter systems go.
And when you start to increase that dose of alcohol, how does that affect the brain? How does the body respond?
Well, what's curious is essentially the brain is getting pickled. I don't really know how else to say it. Sure, at small doses, there isn't much impact, but as people increase that dosage, it essentially shuts down parts of the brain that are responsible for inhibiting bad behaviors. It seems to play an important role in how people can remember things, and so, you know, the impact can be pretty dramatic. And then long term, you know, you start seeing pretty big increases in the size of the holes inside your head, the ventricles of the brain, and in general, you know, decrease in the number of neurons in the brain as well.
So in past shows with you and Paul Armentano, we've heard about research that suggests cannabis actually causes neurogenesis or perhaps brain cell growth. But you're saying here that with alcohol, the most widely used recreational drug out there, it's scientifically proven to kill brain cells?
Dr. Sarah Jo Nixon had a big book on this recently and basically shows, you know, with MRI scans of the brain, folks who are, you know, chronic alcoholics really do have smaller brains than folks who just drink socially or don't drink at all.
And Mitch, if someone does develop an addiction to alcohol, we've been treating it for decades with 12-step programs and chemical detox programs. But other than the psychological factors, what are the physical factors for alcohol addiction?
Well, alcohol is really nothing to play with at high doses. The withdrawal can be extremely severe. So you hear about delirium tremens, about shaking, about hallucinations that people experience when they're trying to get off of alcohol. And unfortunately, one of the quickest ways to get rid of all those withdrawal symptoms is to drink again. And that's why it's such an insidious drug. It really can lead folks into use after use after use after use. And unfortunately, it's just not the kind of thing you want to do on your own. Inpatient detoxification can be a lot more safe than trying to kick it home, particularly given the opportunity for certain kinds of seizures and just other problems associated with alcohol withdrawal.
And do you think a lot of alcohol addiction problems and the physical effects of it are taking a back burner to things out there like meth?
Well, alcohol's been around for literally thousands of years, and people have been drinking problematically that long, so it's almost old news. It's hard to get the media excited about these things, but in fact, alcohol creates all this liver damage, contributes to cardiac problems, contributes to, you know, financial losses in ways that far outstrip any of the illicit drugs. But we've already had a failed experiment with prohibition on alcohol, and we see, you know, literally millions of people use it recreationally without negative consequences. So people understand this is not something that the media can ring alarms about and get a big response.
Well, we do try and raise some of these alarms, I guess, with teen binge drinking and campus drinking. But, you know, with alcohol being around these thousands of years, as you said, do we treat it differently in the America of 2006 than we did in the past?
It does seem to be this kind of focus on children, and I'm sure that that's, you know, a step in the right direction. And of course, teens shouldn't drink and they shouldn't drive and they shouldn't, you know, get lost in these binges. But I think that's kind of a curious way to kind of turn the vision away from problematic drinking adults and folks who are in some ways functioning okay at work but really missing out on a full life because they spend every evening intoxicated on alcohol.
Now, is this something we can sort of recognize and come to terms with, that alcohol is a problem in our society? You know, let's go out there and do something about it. Or did that failed attempt at prohibition in the past diminish the tools we have to fight alcohol addiction now?
I think the education route is the way to go. Much as we've improved cigarette smoking rates in the United States by letting people know what the real negative consequences are, I think we can decrease heavy consumption of alcohol if there were more public service announcements focusing on this. Drunk driving has definitely dropped, and it's partly because of legislation that adds punishments, but it's also partly because of increased awareness. And I feel like regular intoxication and the links associated with alcohol problems like liver damage and stuff like that could be better advertised so people would be more aware of it. But often by the time you're at the point where your liver is damaged, it's way too late. Why not just make it clear to folks that 4 drinks for a woman and 5 drinks for a man is really a binge, that a standard drink is probably smaller than you thought, and that, in fact, you can enjoy alcohol even more with a smaller dose than with a larger dose.
Let's talk about that a little bit, Mitch. You know, how do you enjoy alcohol without falling into those traps of physical addiction or societal addiction, drinking every day or every night?
In fact, data from my own laboratory suggests the fun part of alcohol is in those first 1 or 2 drinks, depending on your weight, sipped slowly and, you know, consumed in a way that'll gradually increase, and then you go to bed while the rest of the metabolism is going on, rather than trying to get 4, 5, 6 drinks down you quickly and ending up overwhelming the whole gastrointestinal system. I think if people understood that mixed drinks, beer, wine, are definitely preferable to drinking hardcore alcohol straight, that drinking games are a real sign of trouble and usually an invitation to some problems, that people with alcoholism in the family should probably really consider whether they want to drink or not, given the genetic components of alcoholism. And more than anything, just taking your time and really enjoying your drinks, sipping them slowly, talking about what things taste like with your friends, much the way lots of connoisseurs of a whole lot of different things talk with each other to increase their enjoyment. What a surprise if people drank wine or liquor or other alcoholic beverages in that same way.
Wow, you mentioned something really fascinating there, Mitch. That is, if you're a teenager who has alcoholic parents, you might consider not drinking at all. I mean, this is borderline revolutionary. We hear a lot of just say no's out there, but no one ever says just say no to alcohol.
Well, it's particularly problematic because what often is inherited from a parent biologically is an insensitivity to alcohol. So these children of alcoholics come to me and they say, I drink, but I really don't feel anything, so I'm not worried. In fact, that not feeling anything is what the risk is all about. Those are the people who end up drinking more in order to create an effect and then putting themselves at risk for liver problems, drunk driving, you know, all kinds of crazy aggressive behaviors. And if they just understood that that decreased sensitivity is actually a marker for trouble, maybe they would turn away. Why use a drug if it really doesn't do that much for you anyway?
And also, if you have alcoholism in your family and are somewhat predisposed to that, is someone also susceptible to other addictions, or is it specific to alcohol?
Big adoption studies in Scandinavia where people are adopted away from their biological parents, so in a design that makes it look like it really is genetic, suggests that that probably is the case, that a sensitivity to almost any substance, but alcohol in particular, tends to increase your response to other problematic drugs. So rats that are bred to really like alcohol, what a surprise, they also really like nicotine. And you can imagine how we all know families where there's an alcoholic parent and then whatever sort of is the drug of choice in the next generation gets to be a problem for the next offspring. And I really think that that's an important thing to keep in mind. I don't mean to imply that biology is destiny, and I do know children of alcoholics who have a couple of drinks once in a while without any troubles. But again, it's just a sign that it's time to be extra careful.
Well, Mitch, thanks again for joining us here today on the Audio Stash, and I look forward to speaking with you next week to explore this topic of alcohol a bit further.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor at State University of New York and author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. We have links to it right up at normalaudiostash.com.